Good morning. You know, I was reflecting on the word potluck. I've been to a lot of potlucks when I grew up at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Salem, Oregon. Anybody ever been there? Okay. Well, we had a lot of potlucks, and I always found it pretty interesting to watch, you know, at the end of the potluck, which dishes still have food, and then which dishes, like, are gone, okay? And I've got a tip for everybody here that's going to come to the brunchy potluck. Is it next week? Okay, somebody just go to KFC and get a bucket of chicken. We all would love that. Okay? Everyone will just walk down and go, oh, who brought this? They're so great. You know, and we'll all, you know, and some people get extra crispy and some people get the barbecue. Just get KFC. Okay. Good morning. My name's Eric Schofield. This is my beautiful wife, Marnie, my handsome, studly son, Hudson. And Charlie is in the nursery. Thank you for having a nursery, okay, because my wife couldn't come because Charlie would be all over here if you didn't have a nursery. So way to go on having a nursery. And, you know, I've heard about this church forever. I've met many of you at different places. You know, I mean, Tom, I can't get rid of this guy. I love him. Okay, Marcus, I mean, this guy can have coffee with the best in the world, okay? And then Chelsea and Matt, you're finally married. We'll probably never get over saying it that way, okay? Because we're just so happy. Everybody's so happy. But today, the topic is the truth about fishing. That's kind of the topic for the day. And I'm privileged to be here. You know, when you think about fishing, there's fish tales out there all the time. You know, oh, man, I caught the biggest fish. But literally, I have to say that my wife caught the biggest fish I've ever seen. I know it because it's at our house. It's mounted on our wall. I wish I could have been there. She was an eighth grader. They had a little lake behind their house. She caught a 10-pound widemouth bass. For those of you that don't quite kind of comprehend how big that fish is, can you just imagine an eighth grade girl with little, you know, pigtails going out the side of her head being pulled in the boat by the fish? Because that's a true story. And so there's no fish tales there. But specifically this morning, when you reflect on kind of fishing, there is something in the New Testament here, the concept of fishing. I mean, God calls us to be fishers of men and women. And, you know, there's lots of images of fishing. You know, there's the person kind of standing in downtown on a little soapbox and, you know, everybody, you got to know God. And, you know, and that's kind of a form of fishing. There's lots of different types of fishing. But today I want to say, what's the truth about fishing? What does it mean to be, maybe this church would be kind of a light on a hill, salt to the neighborhood, a fishing church? What would that look like? What's the truth of what that could look like? And that's what I'd like to look at today. Now, I gave an introduction to my family. Today we're going to look at the person of Christ in Luke 5, 1 through 11. And so I thought, how do you introduce Jesus? I mean, tonight we have this fantastic speaker and, you know, you get introductions. How would you introduce Jesus Christ? So I want to show you a little clip on how one guy said this is how he would introduce Jesus. I think you'll like this. I hope you like it. If you don't like it, don't tell me. I don't want to know. Okay, let's watch that little clip.
If I had the pleasure of bringing out Christ, this is just how I would do it. It ain't got to be the way you do it. You might not think it's just right, but this is how I would do it. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to introduce a man who needs no introduction. His credits are too long to list. He has done the impossible time after time. He hails out of a manger in Bethlehem, Jerusalem, by way of heaven. His mother is still headlining in the Catholic Church today. His daddy is the author of a book that has been on the bestseller list since the beginning of time. He holds the record for the world's greatest fish fry. He fed 5,000 hungry souls with two fish, five loaves loaves of bread. He can walk on water, turn water into wine. No special effects, no camera tricks. He has a headshot on every church fan across the country. Even before the kings of comedy, he was hailed the king of all kings, ruler of the universe, Alpha and Omega, beginning and the end, the bright and the morning star. Some say he's the Rose of Sharon, and some say he's the Prince of Peace. Get up on your feet, put your hands together, and show your love for the second coming of the one and only.
Isn't it good to just kind of be reminded? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Tom. Isn't it good to be reminded just who Jesus is? Sometimes we box him up, or maybe we just forget of just how incredible and awesome Jesus Christ is today. The things that he did, the places that he went, the way he spoke. And so today, I would love to just remind us of one day in the life of Christ. A fishing trip. And bring that fishing trip to 2008 and see if there's anything in that fishing trip that could relate back to today about the truth about fishing. So let me read to you Luke 5, 1 through 11. And let's start there. One day as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, with the people crowding around him. Everywhere he went, there was a crowd. And he was listening, and they were listening to the word of God. He saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to push out a little from shore. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out now into deep water and let the nets for a catch. Let down the nets for a catch." Simon answered, "Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught a thing, but because you say so, I will let down the nets." When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man." For he and his companions were astonished at the catch of fish that they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, your catch will be men." So they pulled the boats ashore, left everything, and followed him. You know, there's a couple highlights out of this little text that I'd love to just make to you. First of all, one, there was a crowd, always a crowd. Two, it says there in verse 2 that Jesus noticed two boats drawn up on the shore. I love that. I love that he notices the little things. He gets in one of the boats and is teaching. Maybe some say he was got into the boat to teach because that his voice, the acoustics, would kind of go off the water. Or that the crowd was getting so big and that he kept backing up. He was finally standing, you know, ankle deep in water. And he finally noticed in the boat, climbed into the boat, began to teach. Now, Simon, I like to think about this, had just come in from fishing all night and they hadn't caught a thing. He's trying to get all these nets cleaned, laid out, dried out. He wants to go home. He wants to have the brunchy thing. And all of a sudden, the guy who's teaching the crowd is in his boat. And so now Simon's a little bit trapped. He's thinking, oh, man, you know, he's, of all the boats he could have picked. Jesus says, you know, why don't you push out a little bit, so they kind of push out. You know the story. We just talked about it. But when they let their nets down for a catch, they had this enormous catch. And the thing that I love about it is it says the fishermen were staggered, is what it says in my version. They were staggered at the haul of fish. What does it take to stagger somebody who this is what they do for a living? And then the other little thing just at the end is it says they left their boats ashore. They just had the biggest catch they've ever had in their entire life. More fish than you've ever seen. And they left them and followed Jesus. Now that says a lot about who Jesus is, because that's probably a lot of money of fish sitting there. Probably. You know, the truth is that if you've ever been in a boat fishing, that fishing can be kind of messy. Have you ever been in a boat, you know, right when, you know, there's a little water in there, there's a little dirt in there. That fishing is kind of a messy process. If you've ever tried to have an event, hey, we're going to have Evangelism Sunday. Next Sunday, everybody just go get all of your friends. Okay, now that gets a little bit messy. Who am I going to invite? And, you know, and what's it going to look like? It's just all of a sudden it's like, oh, I don't know if I can do that. We used to have, the church I used to work at, we used to have an evangelism weekend. You know, it was like a training weekend. People would come in and get trained. And many people were like, oh, I don't know. I don't want to be the person standing on the street corner saying, if you don't commit your life to God, you're committing soul suicide. Come on, everyone, come in. I don't want to be that person. Fishing is kind of messy. I want to just leave it to Marcus. Marcus, you fish. Let me come have my donut and have my coffee and leave, and you be the fish guy. No. God calls all of us to be fishermen and fisherwomen. How? What's it look like? Well, you know, the cool thing is that Jesus left us the perfect scenario. What's the first thing Jesus does? Okay, here we go. Ready? The truth about fishing. What's the first thing that Jesus did? It must be amazing. I mean, because he's so smart. Okay, here it is. He stood on the shore of Lake Gennesaret. The truth about fishing is it starts with something that everybody in this entire sanctuary can do. Stand. Stand. Stand on the shores of some people's lives. Stand there. You know, it's something that it's kind of like, it's so simple that people forget to do it. When we have young life leaders, Chelsea and myself, and, you know, we train them, the first thing we teach them, could you go to a freshman soccer match that we know that nobody else is going to? Could you go there and could you stand on the sidelines and cheer on those kids? Could you do that? What kind of training does it take to stand in somebody's life? I mean, Marnie and I have all our neighbors in our neighborhood. We know all the different things that are going on. We know our neighbor right now who's just lost a job. We know another neighbor whose mom is ill. We have another neighbor who, you know, had a really bad kind of disease in her foot for a while, couldn't walk. All we had to do was just stand in people's lives, and the list of what we could do to serve just kind of popped up. Jesus says, you really want to fish and really make a difference? Can you stand in people's lives? And you know, standing in people's lives can get a little messy, though, can it? It could be a little messy. Okay, what's the second thing Jesus did? Oh, let's just take a look here. Okay, so verse 2. Jesus noticed two boats drawn up on the beach. Now, this is where it gets really tough. But the truth about fishing is the second thing that we have to be able to do is just notice. There was one time one of our area directors, not from here, but in Texas, came up to me. His wife came up to my wife and said she was very upset that she had got her hair cut. She came to our door crying because her husband didn't notice. And she got like 5 inches cut off. Now, we chuckle, but truly, she was very upset. She was like, I just can't believe it. I mean, I'm his wife. He doesn't notice. Do you know the power of just noticing? Noticing when people are, there was one, I was at a Trinity Covenant Church serving there for 6 years, and one lady came up on a Sunday and came up to about a couple of people, and she goes, did you notice that I wasn't here the last 6 weeks? No, you didn't. That's what Mary said to a group of people. No one noticed when she was gone. You can notice when somebody's there. You can notice when they're gone. You can notice that you read something about them in the bulletin, that you prayed for them. There was a kid named Greg Baker at South Salem High School. He's gone to be with the Lord. He was a kid with a disease that put him in a wheelchair and put the life expectancy on his life at 19 or 20 years old. He was also a very smart kid. Scored 1,600 on the SAT. Okay, perfect score. He was the kind of kid that was just tried to be as involved as he could be, even though his life was not necessarily, you know, allowing him to do all that he wanted to do. Greg Baker's senior year at the prom, I'll never forget it. I was a chaperone standing in the very, you know, kind of, I was standing by that door back there. That was my job for the night. Stand there and don't let anybody go out that door. Okay, I can do that. That's what a chaperone does. So I'm standing by the door and I watch a group of kids leave the prom and they come back 40 minutes later. They come back with Greg Baker. They wheel his wheelchair in, clip-on tie, navy blue blazer, and they fired him straight out to the dance floor where they're all over dancing around his chair the rest of the night at the time of his life. What really was going on there was they were all at the prom and somebody said in this group of friends, "Where's Greg Baker?" And somebody else probably said, "Well, he's, you know, I mean, he didn't have a date. He's never had a date. He can't drive a car." And somebody in the group said, "We got to go get him." And all of a sudden, a little momentum happened. And next thing you know, they went and got permission from the principal to leave the prom, which is, you know, against the rules, because you go out and drink and then you can't come back. But they went to Greg Baker's house. I would have loved to be there as Greg Baker on a Saturday night is home, and the knock came on the door. And of course, Greg's thinking to himself, "Well, it's nobody I know, because nobody's ever come to my house." And as the door swung open and all I could hear was the squealing and the smell of perfume and all these gorgeous girls come firing into his family room and they say, "Greg, get your tie on because you're going to the prom." How did that start? This wonderful moment. Somebody noticed. Every single one of you noticed many things last week. And you'll notice many things this week. And you might even notice some things this morning. It starts with noticing. That's the truth about fishing. As you start noticing people and dropping a little, you know, set of flowers by somebody's house or writing a little card, the power of a written card. I know people love email, but there's a thing called a pencil. You probably don't know what that is. And you write a little card. And I'm telling you, when people receive, we got a card, Marnie and I got a card yesterday, Friday in the mail, and we were like, our breath was taken away a little bit, that they had just remembered to write a little note. Can you stand? Can you notice? This is the truth about fishing. It makes a difference. The third thing that's pretty fun is it says here, it says Jesus went aboard one of the boats. Okay, remember, he could have gone on anybody's boat, but he got into Simon Peter's boat. And this is where the big fishing trip started, right? I mean, later we know how much, okay, but who's really fishing here? I think Jesus is fishing. So he gets into Simon's boat. He gets into his boat. This is where things might get just a little bit more messy, is when we get into somebody's boat. And you think, well, how's that happen? How do you go aboard somebody's boat? Well, Jesus asked him. He invited him. "Hey, what do you think about we get in the boat together and we'll, you know, push out a little bit from the shore?" An invitation. You ever been invited to somebody's house for dinner? We've been invited, you know, we've lived in our neighborhood 3 years and 3 months or something. I don't think we've ever said no to an invitation. "Would you like to come over for coffee? You want to come over for brunch? You want to come over to our house? We're not going to serve dinner. We're just going to have kind of some appetizers on the back patio." We've never said no to an invitation. You know, the greatest way to board somebody's life, not board, B-O-R-E-D, just to get into their life, invite them. Maybe you don't want to invite them to church. That just seems so threatening. Fine. Invite them to anything. I remember one of our good friends who, you know, Lord be with him, he's out, he's playing in the PGA tournament right now. He started the day in 27th. Maybe at the end of the day, he'll climb up to 15th. But the one time I was at a golf tournament with him when he was a young buck, he's 32 years old now, he's really old, but when he was younger and he'd never kind of done well in a tournament, I happened to be with him at the Byron Nelson, Dallas, Texas. And Ben Crane, that's his name, Ben Crane, finished second. A small, you know, check, $518,000. But anyway, as a 25-year-old, to take second, the only first and second get to kind of get the interview. They get handed the big check. They get to stand with Byron Nelson and have this little moment. And Ben, being 25 years old at the time, I was the only one there he knew. And so after he had taken second, and he was standing on the 18th green, kind of the trophy ceremony, all this stuff, there's 30,000 people gathered around this kind of amphitheater type setting. Ben sees me up in the crowd, you know, I don't know how he made me out, and he says, "Hey, I want that guy. Now there's 30,000 people, and I am 50 yards away from him, way up high. I look like every single other person in the golf tournament. I got a hat on, shorts. You know, I mean, I'm just a middle-aged guy, just like everybody else. I want that guy right there. I want him inside the ropes. Come on. Crowd parts. I look back. I'm thinking, me? At that moment, I felt like I did when I was in seventh grade and Kathy Kuhneline asked me to dance. Okay, it was like, are you kidding me? The crowd parts, I start walking down. The grass is, I get to the rope that all day long people are saying, back up from the rope. Don't get near the rope. I got to the rope, the security guard lifted the rope and said, right in here, sir. I stepped on the other side of the rope. Everything was different. The grass wasn't matted down. There was room to kind of stroll around. I started kind of walking like this, and a little kid about this age of Hudson, hands over the rope, his hat with a Sharpie pen attached to the bill. Give me that hat. And I signed it. I gave it back to him. Somewhere there's a kid with my signature. But on the end, how did I feel? Oh my goodness. To be invited inside. People don't say no to invitations. People are like, you thought of me? Are you kidding me? What did Jesus do? The truth about fishing is he stood in people's lives, he noticed, and he invited. Now, all of a sudden, evangelism doesn't seem that difficult to me. It's like, well, I can do that. I mean, it seems, I noticed today, I love this church. I love this church. You cut your donuts in half. Okay? I don't know if you're cutting them in half because you're looking at my waist, or if you're cutting them in half because you're trying to get your dollar to go farther, or if you're cutting them in half because you're just thinking about everybody going, you know, nobody really wants a whole donut. Everybody just wants a half a donut. And then we have four. But we feel like we just had a half a donut. And so it's great. I love it. I can't wait for this service to be over. I want a donut. You know, the other thing that Jesus does that I just love, okay, he didn't have to do it this way. He didn't have to do it this way. Oh, no, he gives them a catch of fish that's so big that the boat begins to sink. Grab your minds around this. That they have to call another boat and fill that boat to sinking point. He didn't have to do that. He could have given him eight fish and it would have been awesome. Oh no. He gives and he gives and he gives. We can do this. Give. Give. People are like so blown away when you give. I remember being at a weekend camp one time. Magruder. Camp Magruder. You don't know this camp. It doesn't matter. I have 141 people in my group. They're middle schoolers, okay? Maybe that's a knock against me, I'm not sure. And then there's a 10-person ladies prayer group at Camp Magruder. Now, who's bringing Camp Magruder the money? I am. $16,000 my group's bringing. The 10 prayer ladies, maybe they're bringing, I don't know. Hey, Sunday morning, we have breakfast. I said to Camp Magruder, these junior high kids, man, it's so hard for them to get up at 8 a.m. Is there any way we could have breakfast at 8:30? No. Nope, the prayer ladies want to have breakfast at 8. Okay. Let's just kind of build the camp around these 10 ladies. I think we should. So we come in for breakfast. I happen to walk past the one table that the prayer ladies get. I just noticed it. I noticed, but I didn't lock anything in. Yeah, there were some flowers and junior high kids. You know, they probably eat those. Okay, well, that's fine. But I'm sitting at breakfast, and I'm sitting next to George Carter and, you know, kind of Matt Wade's over here. We're having a great breakfast, and all of a sudden George says, hey, do you think I could get some brown sugar for my oatmeal? I said, well, absolutely. Hey, could you pass the brown sugar? People are all looking at each other, and then finally the word comes back, there is no brown sugar. I was like, okay. Ask the first, can we get some brown sugar? Yeah, we don't have any brown sugar. So I get up. I go to the kitchen. As I'm passing the ladies' prayer table, they have two brown sugars on their table. So I know that there's brown sugar in the camp. I go back to the kitchen. I say, excuse me, Mr. Barnsey, kind of, Mr. Magruder guy. Could we get some brown sugar for our kids out here? You know, the $16,000 kids that we're bringing to your camp this weekend? Yeah, we just need a little brown. He goes, oh, yeah. We decided not to put brown sugar on your tables. Oh, why is that? He goes, well, we feel like if we gave brown sugar to one of your tables, we'd have to give brown sugar to all your tables. There's a lot of people that think this way. I'm telling you that Jesus did not think this way. Jesus had tables with brown sugar spilling off the sides. Give. It's a great way to fish. You just give. Bring a meal, drop it off, pay for a kid to go to camp, find money you didn't even think you had that you don't have. Give. God will bless you when you give. You know, the last little thing in the text is Jesus just says, by the way, Simon, don't be afraid. From now on, your catch will be men. He could have not known what that meant. He couldn't have understood this awesome little moment of vision where Jesus was just kind of giving him. And really at the end, that's kind of my last point to all of us, is just the last thing we can do to fish is just have visions and speak to people. And tell people, you know what? You're one of the most encouraging people. Like Nancy Coleman. We saw Nancy Coleman. We were in Oregon 2 weeks ago. And Nancy Coleman came up to us, and you don't know Nancy, but let me tell you, in the last 3 years, we've received 8 cards from Nancy Coleman. She remembers everything. Hudson's birthday, Marnie's birthday, St. Patrick's Day card. We get cards all the time from Nancy Coleman. So Marnie and I both kind of, surrounded Nancy Coleman, and we didn't talk about it or anything, and we said, Nancy, you are the best card writer ever. You have a gift. You are the card queen. Nancy, really? And we just kind of spoke vision and said, yes. And do you know how much your cards mean? We love your cards. It's just like every time they come, we're thinking she just spent another 41 cents. And we open it, and your card always has that little, kind of piece of paper to protect the card from the postman. I mean, you're like the card queen. Tell people. You're encouraging. You're always on time. Golly, you're amazing. That music was awesome. That guy who makes coffee wherever he is in this church, you're amazing. You're the best coffee guy ever. People like it when that kind of stuff happens. They do. I always tell myself when I'm training myself, kind of look in the mirror, you can do it today. I always say to myself, and every person you meet today, no matter how old they are, I don't care, they all at one point in time were a teenager. Everybody is still a kid. I tell myself that because that, for me, opens up for me to be reminded that every single one of you wants somebody to stand in your life. Every one of you wants somebody to notice your life. Everybody in this room wants to be invited. We all want to be invited. We all want somebody to kind of get into our life and give us visions. And we want people to give to us. We love it. I've never seen a person go, oh, a gift for me? And set it off to the side. Thank you. No way. We rip that paper open. Are you kidding me? And our family has a tradition, no matter what the gift is, whatever. Yes! This is awesome! So, that's the truth about fishing. And in closing, let me remind you of who you are. You have the 2 Corinthians verse, Tom? Well, first we'll do Colossians. Just as you go out of these doors right here, let me remind you of who you are. One, to them God has chosen to make known among the Gentiles, to them God has made, everybody outside these doors right now, the glorious riches of this mystery. The mystery, which is Christ in you. That's pretty awesome. When you leave here, guess who is inside of you going with you? And everywhere you go, you fish. Jesus is fishing through you. That's one. The second verse is 2 Corinthians 2:15. You have that one, Tom? Thank you. You're so good. You are good. I'm serious. Wherever the donut guy is, let's get him four halves. Okay. For we are to God the aroma of Christ. Okay, I know we've gone 1 minute over. I just got to tell you this one little story about the aroma of Christ. I loaned my car one time to Adam McCauley. You don't know Adam McCauley, but he wanted my car for the prom. I had a Dodge 600 SE Turbo, 1986, Dodge 600 SE Turbo. Nobody ever wanted to borrow my car. But Adam McCauley didn't have a car, and he didn't have a dad, and so when prom time came, all of a sudden, my car looked pretty good. So Adam borrowed my car for the prom, and after the prom, he returned it, gassed up, cleaned, and I said, how'd it go? He said, well, it's pretty good. He said, but, he goes, do you wear Old Spice? I said, yeah, I wear Old Spice. He goes, I know. He said, your steering wheel is just like, it's just got old. He said, everywhere we went that night, me and my date, he goes, I felt like you were with us. I said, I know that. For we are to God the aroma of Christ. We're the fragrance. And we are the fragrance to those who are being saved and those who are perishing. To the one, we are the smell of death. But to the other, we don't know who they are. But to some, we are the fragrance of life. When we go out, people are like, what is your deal? You're so giving, noticing. You're such a fisherman. You're such a fisherwoman. And you say, yeah, that's because Jesus is in me and I just got that Old Spice thing going.